what's going on tonight, boy? Podcast part two today, of course, because we didn't get around to talking about this earlier on. But abortion is something that people talk about so much. And I can go back to when the abortion referendum was on. It is the one topic that really, really divides the nation, morally and otherwise. And of course, a lot of people believe they were duped during the referendum because, of course, the government made lots of promises. And I know people who believe they were only voting for abortion in certain circumstances. Well, that's not really what we got. We got very liberal abortion laws, which are probably going to be about to be a lot more liberal very, very soon. But not only the liberal abortion laws concern people, but it's the cost. And what happened? During that referendum, we were told by pro-choice that the numbers of 3,500 people that were travelling to the UK on a yearly basis, that wouldn't increase. But that certainly isn't the case, because now we have somewhere between 25,000 and 30,000 people in the space of 5 years have had an abortion in this country. A lot of people are not fazed by that, but some people are fazed. A lot of people are not fazed by the cost, but some people are fazed by the cost. Hence, there's a report out by a pro-life campaign to find out exactly what the cost is. Mind you, it is hard to quantify. There is a human cost to it, but also there's a financial cost for the taxpayer. And joining me on the line is Eilish Mulroy, who's some spokesperson for the pro-life campaign. Eilish, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Niall.
Eilish, I suppose there's the cost, when you put a title in, the cost of abortion, the real cost of abortion is the human cost. But I suppose we do have to look at the financial cost as well, because the state would lead us to believe that there wouldn't have been a massive financial cost to this. Now, firstly, how do you calculate the financial cost?
Well, you're right, Niall, of course, about the human cost. And it's something that we're talking about a lot in the context of the 3-year review of the abortion law, which we've talked about before and which is coming up. And as you say, you know, could very much propose more liberalisation of the law, which is already very extreme. But to go to the financial cost, before the abortion referendum, as you said, voters were assured that abortion would be rare. On the basis of abortion being rare, one would have expected that the cost to the taxpayer for providing abortion would be less, would not be huge. So we have been looking at this for a number of months. There are a number of TDs who have asked parliamentary questions of the Minister for Health and the Department of Health. And as you know, parliamentary questions are a way of getting information from the minister, from the government, information that might necessarily be press released or published by the department. And I think that's probably part of the problem here, is that this information is not easily available. It's not publicly discussed. And it can only be found out by those TDs asking those questions. The government hasn't published clear numbers on the total expenditure, which necessitates going that route. So from the available data, we put together this report and we asked a number of questions around the spending on advertising, the spending on, training of GPs to provide abortion, the spending on money being given to GPs after they administer abortion pills, the spending on abortion pills itself. And all of that together has come to nearly 46 million.
It's an incredible amount of money, isn't it? I just saw the figure there. It's 45 point whatever it is million. It's an incredible amount of money, isn't it?
And that's not, it could well be more than that. That's just on the basis of concrete data received from the Department of Health. So there could be many other areas where money is being spent.
I noticed that on the data that you have here, that it says, for example, in the HSEY options in 2019, it was 565,000, but possibly as high as 1 million. So it's kind of hard to tell exactly how much, but you can see there's an increasing cost each year. The following year is 1,800,000. A year later, 2021, is 2 million or 2.2 million, should I say. So we can see that the cost in every aspect, including advertising, including women's health itself, the cost is rising every year. Now, of course, we know hospital costs rise anyway, but it does look they're spending more money on it every year, almost promoting it when you talk about advertising.
That's right. And also, look, if you look at the figures, as you say, the figures and the abortion rates are much, much higher than anybody would have anticipated based on the assurances received from senior politicians prior to the abortion referendum. In actual fact, if you take into account this year's figures, because we calculate the figures based on the number of claims made by GPs to the Department of Health to be paid for abortions, it's actually looking like nearly 35,000 abortions up until June of 2023. Wow. So obviously, the more abortions that are happening, the more money that's being spent.
Why is the number suddenly gone? Sorry for interrupting, but in your view, we were told during the referendum that, look, if you vote yes to this, there's 3,500 roughly at the time women were travelling to the UK per year from Ireland. And we were told those numbers wouldn't really increase, but we expected them to increase somewhat. But they seem to have increased exponentially. Why do you think that is? Yeah. Is that not just because, well, maybe it's because we just have a lack of support for women. We didn't provide that. We provided the abortion, which was an easy way out. But we didn't provide the support for women who are in crisis pregnancies.
Yeah, I think there's two strands to that, Niall. One is that once, you know, laws do change behaviours, you know, over time, kind of a culture changes to accommodate a law. And that has definitely started to happen in some quarters, in at least, where abortion becomes the de facto kind of response to an unplanned pregnancy, and people aren't even hearing about other alternatives, even from their own families. And I've spoken to people in recent times who that happened to, who just never really got told by anybody that you can go ahead and do this. You can parent, you can continue your education, you can continue in your job. So that's part of the problem. The other problem is that the government itself seems to have absolutely zero interest in promoting positive alternatives to abortion. So when one rings the My Options helpline, even if a person is not abortion-minded, that's really a de facto referral service. You're given the names of doctors who can provide abortions in your areas. So if you have a government that has no interest in encouraging people around positive alternatives, around parenting, around adoption, around, you know, not letting that unplanned pregnancy define their lives, but, you know, triumphing over that and continuing with their plans for their lives and parenting. There's so many supports available in terms of financial supports that people don't really know about those, because what's happening is when they ring this helpline, they're not being given that.
I was going to ask you about the helpline. So I would like to have imagined that when you ring a helpline and you're sort of 19 or 20 years of age and you have a crisis pregnancy or an unwanted pregnancy, as some people might say, that, you know, they would go through the options with you and say, well, look, we have this, we're here to support you. What's your financial situation? You know, you can always consider adoption. Is that something you've thought about? And then the final thing, maybe, and of course, you know, there always is termination of pregnancy. Or is termination of pregnancy the first option and everything else is just ancillary after that?
Well, it's hard to get information on how the My Option counsellors are trained. On the My Options website, you will see reference to them being told about other alternatives. But the evidence suggests that that's not happening when people telephone My Options service, sadly. And if somebody telephones that service right now who is in unplanned pregnancy, even if one is not looking for the name of a doctor, they likely come off the call with the name of a doctor who they can go to see for the first appointment. Mm-hmm. That's really unacceptable. I think that it's doing a disservice. It's not pro-choice. It's the opposite. It's really not enabling people or giving people the information or empowering them to make an informed decision. And we know that people regret abortion. It may, you know, people can question how many people regret abortion. Certainly, some people really do regret their abortions, and they wish that they had somebody give them alternatives. And I know from my own experience, and many people involved in the pro-life movement do, from their speaking to women over the years, that it's just one person saying, you can do it, I'll help you with childcare, that can make that woman change her mind. And I think it's really, really important that we go back to the drawing board and start looking at this again in a serious way. It doesn't look like the government has any interest in that. And that's why we're looking for, like, we really want transparency around all of that, and openness and transparency around the financial aspect as well, because the public have a right to know, given that the taxpayer is funding all of the...
I want to get back to that. Okay, so back to the nuts and bolts of it. And for those who are pro-choice or pro-life, of course, cost is always a factor. How much is it costing the taxpayer? Now, of course, with the amendments to the legislation that are proposed or now planned, that net is going to get wider. So realistically, girls or women over 12-week period who are pregnant can also have a termination, or will also be able to have a termination, possibly up to 22 weeks, although some have their way, there'll be no time limit because they want to decriminalise completely, which is quite concerning for many people who would have voted in that referendum based on the strict criteria that was given to them at the time. What is the likelihood, and when is the likelihood, of the laws changing from 12 weeks to 22 or unrestricted, the 3-day cooling off period disappearing, the fact that doctors can refuse to do it based on their own conscience? When is all that going to be removed, or is it going to be removed, or the criminalisation as well?
Well, right now that's being considered by the government. The 3-year review report, which was published back last May, contained these really very severe, very, very extreme recommendations, as you say, to allow abortion, to decriminalize abortion, to change the 12-week period, to remove the 3-day wait, which we know has saved lives. At the moment, the Health Committee, the Joint Health Committee, the Oireachtas Health Committee, is considering the report. And in terms of any proposed legislative change, they are due to send their report to Cabinet, and it'll then be considered separately. Operational changes can happen without any legislation, and there is an implementation group in place looking at that. It's very sad that the current process that has happened before the Health Committee, they've had two public sessions on the 3-year review. I think during both of those sessions, there was a lot of, I suppose the chairperson of the review was in and really was exposed for not having done, like, for example, on the 3-day wait, didn't interview any woman who had availed of the 3-day wait. There was really a lot of question marks, even raised by
For,
members of
yeah,
the
for
Health
people who
Committee.
don't know about that, so there was roughly 4,000 women who had gone for the first appointment and didn't go back for the second appointment. So we can only assume those women either changed their minds, had a miscarriage, or they weren't pregnant in the first place, possibly, which is
Yeah, I
unlikely.
mean, again, it's very hard to pinpoint the numbers exactly because, as you can see, it's very hard to get the abortion numbers. But certainly, the 3-day wait has saved countless lives. And if one is to recommend removing the 3-day wait, at a government level, that should be based on information and research that doesn't just talk to people who have availed of abortion, but also talks to women who have availed of the 3-day wait and who now have their babies. So I think that the lack of evidence and the lack of data informing the recommendations of the 3-year review are concerning. I think the way in which the Health Committee has been handling it is also concerning. And there is a very good chance there will be some proposal to change the law to make it more extreme than it already is. I do think that
Do you
that
think
will
it'll
have
be
a big
decriminalized?
backlash. Sorry, Niall.
Do you think, well, of course, one of the big cases in the UK this year was a woman who was 35 years of age who had an abortion and was sent to jail. That jail sentence was then overturned because of the outcry in the UK. And since then, they have now been lobbying, which it looks like it may happen in the UK, to have abortion decriminalised. Now, for people who don't understand that, there's this sense, or so we're told by doctors, if it's, say, 14 weeks or 13 weeks, or even at the 12-week period, that they have to be so careful how they do it, otherwise it becomes a criminal offence with a mandatory 14 years in jail. They want that removed completely, so there'll be no doubt by doctors as to whether they can or can't perform a termination of pregnancy after that 12-week period. Now, of course, where that goes realistically is that you could perform a termination the day before a child is due to be given birth to. That's the concerning part. I'm not saying that's going to happen. It could, but it may not happen. But it could lead to abortions anywhere between 20 and 30 weeks, which is, I suppose, concerning for a lot of people who would have voted yes, for certain circumstances during the referendum.
You're 100% right. I think an awful lot of people have voted yes in the referendum because they thought that women died because of lack of abortion, which of course we know is not true. Doctors could always treat women if their lives are at risk. But decriminalisation would be an ex very, very extreme provision, ultimately if there's no penal sanction. And the penal sanctions within the law are really aimed at providers and doctors, not at the women. Nobody wants to see any woman criminalised or penalised. It's really aimed at the providers. And if those criminal sanctions aren't there, it does leave the possibility of an abortion happening up to 40 weeks at a time when that baby could be born. Babies can be born, as we know, from 23, 22 weeks, even 21 weeks in very, very rare circumstances. And we know there are so many couples who, would love to have children who are unable to. So it seems like it's absolutely inhumane to consider a decriminalization. I think that it is no nothing like what people would have expected. Those who voted yes, certainly those who were campaigning against repeal of the Eighth Amendment, it would be a shocking thing to happen. I don't think that will happen. I think that there are enough TDs in the Dáil that would involve a change of legislation. There is no party whip imposed on the abortion question because it's a matter of conscience. And I do think there are still enough TDs left in the Dáil who would be opposed to such an extreme
Well, I know Leo
change.
Varadkar has said already that he would be opposed to changing it at this present moment in time because it was too soon. I think that was the words he used, that it was too soon after the referendum. But I suppose we don't know, and obviously people before profit have their bill in there at the moment to make all those changes that we spoke about. But can I ask you, Eilish, finally, sorry, just from a pro-life point of view, do you find that, I'm not saying you've lost the battle, because the battle will never be lost, because you'll always have a change of government, you know, in the future. You might have a conservative government in the future, as we've seen in America. That has happened, obviously, the tide has changed. But do you find being in pro-life, is it a kind of isolating place at the moment? I mean, do you find that you've kind of lost the battle and people are kind of given up who may have been by your side at one point?
Well, I can see how people would think that. I think that every movement goes through, you know, rough patches, ups and downs. As you say, in other countries, we can see how, you know, after many, many years of legal abortion, it can be, people could rethink that. And also after many, many years of legal abortion, more and more women speak out, because they don't speak out in the early years after their abortion, but often as they get older, about their abortion regret. And that can have an impact. I also think that the pro-life movement is a strong minority, even if it is a minority. It's a strong minority and an active minority. I think there are a lot of pro-life voters. I think politicians respond to that, and they know that pro-life people will use their vote at election time. So our view is that, you know, you plow on. Just because something is out of fashion or unpopular, it doesn't mean that you continue to campaign for it. And remember, this is about ending lives. So it's something that no matter how popular or not it is at a particular time, pro-life people will continue to work towards a country that, you know, has with restored protections to unborn children and proper and positive support for their mothers. I definitely think the next election, you know, you will see pro-life people using their vote more, I would say, given all that's happened and how, and I think you'll also see a certain amount of buyer's remorse from people who voted yes, who really did not expect to see this level of numbers. So I think it will come around again. And even if it takes time, we'll keep at it.
All right, well, look, I appreciate you coming on the show today. And for those who didn't hear the cost, by the way, the cost so far, as Eilish pointed out, has been over 45,000, almost 46 million, should I say, not 1,000. It wouldn't be too bad if it was 46,000, although it would be always bad in some sense. 46 million euro of your taxpayers' money has gone towards abortion since the referendum. This is in relation to advertising and obviously performing terminations, GP services, etc., etc. Eilish, thank you very much indeed for drawing attention to that. It's in a report you can catch. It's called Government Expenditure on Abortion, and it is available for people to see if they want to see the PDF. But thank you for coming on the show, and thank you for talking to us.
Thanks, Niall.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.